Hello, everyone, and thank you, Tom, for always welcoming us with a bright spark. And thank you, Sanford, as well, for always choosing the most appropriate and lovely music anytime we gather. So this morning, I would like to start by reading these words of Martin Exler's. It wasn't long ago when there was a recognition of a battle for the minds of men and women too, presumably. Human beings are taken up with this battle, both being attacked and attacking. I'm sure somebody wants your vote. He has to grab hold of your mind to get it. Somebody wants to sell you his wares. He has to grab hold of your mind to do that. So we see a battle raging constantly. This battle might be seen symbolically as occurring between the heads of the dragon. They are all vying for first place. There is another battle which is described in the book of Revelation. There was war in heaven. Well, these battles I have been describing are occurring in the first heaven. That, after all, is where the dragons with his heads resides. We may see it in terms of the human mind. What is it that shall characterize that facility? We are well aware that the Prince of Darkness has occupied this mental capacity in the world the way it is. His occupation involves a continuing battle. We have a recognition that this mental capacity should be filled with the light rather than the darkness. It is the same mental capacity, whether it is occupied by the light or the darkness. In the first heaven, it is occupied by the darkness. In the new heaven, it is occupied by the light. Every digital screen, every news broadcast, and every social media feed today feels like a manifestation of this multi-headed dragon. The dragon of modern media bombards us all with a relentless torrent of horror, broadcasting war, systemic violence, financial ruin and economic collapse, and bitter, bitter hatred. People are drawn into this constant negativity and hostility. Just about everybody seems to have an opposing opinion about everything. What should be media tools for connection have devolved into battlegrounds of anger and hatred. These toxic thoughts and feelings and behaviors are high nutrition and fuel for the dragon. He is gleefully in a state of delighted and pure bliss because he thrives on a currency of fear and outrage. His goal is to make humans feel isolated, helpless, and convinced that darkness has won, trapping humanity in a state of collective despair. Rather than meeting him with outrage or opening our hearts to him, we neutralize him with the power of light. A louder, raging voice does not equal a greater presence. Instead, we take the road seemingly less traveled by. As it says in Philippians, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, think on these things. And that will make all the difference. As I think we all recognize, underneath this layer of unceasing noise and chaos, a global awakening has been underway. An army of light workers unified by a shared radiant frequency is emerging in the north, the south, the east, the west, across this planet to anchor and focus divine light into our world. As the dragon screams its illusions of division, the light's quiet army is paving the way for light to create the new. We and many other awake and awakening ones around the globe understand that the true battle isn't physical, but a shift from fear to love. Every conscious breath, every love-filled word, every truth-filled word, every step of light extended dissolves the dragon's lies and transforms the earth around us. There are all kinds of light workers on this planet from all walks of life. So I'd like to share with you part of a presentation from one of them. A name we all recognize is Maria Shriver. She's a journalist presently focusing on finding meaning and rising above daily noise, as featured in her weekly Sunday paper. Quote, this week I made a concerted effort to pay attention to the little things, to the way the grass moves when there is a slight breeze, to the sounds of birds in the early morning. I even started paying attention to the sound of the quiet in my home. It sounds like air breathing. It sounds like cracks in the wood floor. It sounds, well, like silence. Being curious about the little things this week made me feel deeply grateful for this wild and precious life. I'm grateful to be able to notice that the wind moves the grass to and fro. I'm grateful that the birds seem joyful in a world that feels so fearful. And I'm grateful that I can notice quiet when most people feel overwhelmed by how noisy our world has become. I know it's noisy. I feel that too. But I've learned something recently. When the noise gets to be too much, when I find myself going down the rabbit hole of things I don't understand, I must stop myself, or more specifically, I must stop my mind from going there and return to my heart instead. It's at these moments that I return to the slow sound of my breath, to the grass, to the birds, and to the quiet all around me and within. Gratitude does that for you. It brings you back to what is real and what really matters. It brings you back to the people and moments that remind you why you are here. This week, I am in Minneapolis at the Special Olympics USA Games, and I am grateful to be here. Picture it for a moment, thousands of athletes who have spent their lives being told what they cannot do are now proving that they can. They're running, jumping, swimming, winning, losing, and trying again. They are surrounded by coaches and volunteers and families who show up not because they have to, but because they want to, because love brings them here. Unquote. I recently read the book Theo of Golden by Alan Levi. It's another wonderful example that perfectly illustrates how light can flow through a single channel to bring profound blessings to the world. The past few years seems to have seen a surge in nonfiction books driven by a definite consciousness of light. Yet to me, this awareness remains very rare in fiction. While many novels successfully deliver beautiful lessons, few of them truly reflect an author writing from a state of elevated spiritual perception. As an aside, what a delight it was for me 2 days ago to discover an article in the Wall Street Journal entitled, Theo of Golden Broke Every Rule in Publishing. It's an unprecedented bestseller. Mr. Levi's book carries a light that I believe has the ability to rearrange something inside the reader, to rearrange something that opens the door to a new way of being. It's a simple story about an elderly man named Theo who is empathetic and generous. He acts as a literal and figurative vessel of light, shining a spotlight on the unseen beauty in others. His spirituality is expressed through what becomes a sacred ritual of studying local portraits. He then, at a later date, guides each portrait subject into conversation, telling them what he sees when he studies their face in the frame, and affirming that each person is capable of saintliness. Through his small, deliberate acts of grace, he hands them a piece of their own worth. As I see it, the story points to the transformative power found not in grand displays, but in the sacred and masterful expression of love, expressed through the perfect alignment of a wise mind and a radiant heart. As we know, love shining through the light is what gives power to the new heaven to make manifest the new earth. Along this line, Kabbalah, for example, teaches that our existence comprises two interconnected realms, the 1% realm and the 99% realm. The 1% world is the physical world that we perceive with our five senses, sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch, which we navigate through daily. It's the world governed by the appearance of separation from one another, from nature, and separation from the divine. It's the world of restriction and illusion. But the 99% realm is the unseen spiritual realm of cause, of absolute fulfillment, order, and endless light. It's the realm of the underlying energy of the Creator and unconditional love. I like to think of this 1% realm as the old heaven. And the visible realm of chaos and suffering. The real world, the new heaven, is the 99% realm. Kabbalah also says that whenever we experience the slightest joy or happiness, it is because we have tiptoed into that 99% realm, even if only for a brief time. It is our job as creator beings to see to it that our minds are not vessels occupied by the dragon and his henchmen at the 1%, but in fact are angelic vessels in the 99% world, consistently holding and stewarding the presence of the creative power of light. We recently had some new overhead light bulbs installed in our home. If you've ever paused to look closely at the packaging of light bulbs, you'll find a subtle number followed by a K, which is the marker of its subtle warmth or its brilliance. This is the Kelvin scale, which measures the color temperature of light. The lower numbers give a warm amber glow. The higher numbers bring a sharp, brilliant light. Talking to the electrician that was here reminded me that different temperatures of light serve as a perfect analogy for how we let the light shine. Letting the light shine and being alert to what that means moment by moment is not a boring an undertaking. I mean, it's not a boring and mundane undertaking, but it's an exciting adventure. Think of the lower Kelvin numbers in terms of the soft golden light of a candle or a fireplace. This, to me, is the light of presence, rest, and deep connection. It can hold space for someone's grief. It's gentle. It's soothing. It's safe. A little higher in the Kelvin numbers presents a light that's clean, neutral white. I see this as the light of creative conversation with friends, or action just moving through the day. And then there are high Kelvins, the blue white light of high noon. This is the light of focused purpose, brilliant inspiration, clarity, and magnificent truth. No illusions here. No intensity of Kelvins is better than another. We keep the flame of light steady, fueled by a passionate heart. And through that steadiness, wisdom grows. Wisdom that knows what each moment needs, what intensity each moment needs. From there, we offer whatever light will heal, whatever brightness will lift. The fire shall ever be burning upon the altar. It shall never go out. We are creative beings whose vessel of mind, not to exclude our hearts, is being restored from occupancy by the dragon to the state of the one who has been called Lucifer, son of the morning. Lucifer's name, as we know, means light bearer. We don't have the experience of Lucifer without bearing the light. Lucifer is the one who carries the torch, perfect in beauty, radiant, illuminating and vanishing the darkness. If we've thought about it at all, Lucifer has been thought of in male or masculine terms. But I would venture to say that Lucifer has a feminine half, one that has until now remained in the shadows, hidden, quietly waiting to be visible once again. Her name is Sophia. Her name means intuitive divine wisdom. She is the one who understands what that light reveals. She sees and she perceives deeply, and she transforms illumination into meaning. Together, they are a perfect wholeness. Where Lucifer's light shines, Sophia's wisdom sees. And where Sophia yearns to understand, Lucifer's radiance makes that possible. Two expressions, equal and inseparable as one in divine light. I'd like to close with these words. Lucifer and Sophia. The morning star ignites the night, a male expanse of burning light. He scorches heaven's boundless height and blinds the dark with sovereign might. The feminine, a silent sea, holds wisdom's quiet mystery. She weaves the truth in worlds so grand, and guides him with a gentle hand. He is the fire that breaks the mold. She is the truth the fires unfold. In sacred dance, they ever shine, the light, the bright, the whole divine. So. Over to you, Joyce.
You're muted, Joyce.
All right, how's that? Thank you, Maureen. That was so beautiful, so deep, so true. Such an expression of the mind, of the heart, in clear focus and purpose, and multidimensional in this world that we are here. To see, to live, and to bring a new perspective, not from the 1%, as you referenced in the Kabbalah, of the dimensional world of what we can see and taste and smell and hear and the five senses. Or the world of form, the world of effects, but the cause of those effects, the deeper meaning of why we're here, the realm of spirit, the remaining 99%, as you pointed out, has been out of view, the non-physical spiritual dimensions that underlie and generate everything. Whether it's 1% to 99%, I'm not sure if that's accurate, but we can certainly relate that the 1% is limited to a very narrow view of the world of material man. Certainly, the understanding that is pointed out here is that there is so much more that the mind and the soul have not seen of the world that is before our eyes. Reality of man being in seven dimensions is something we've understood for a while. If we refer to the light spectrum in our three-dimensional worldview, we see a rainbow of colors, seven primary ones that we've learned in our youth. But we also know that there are other spectrums, waves of light that are invisible to our eyes, but are present and operational in our dimensional world. Radio, microwave, infrared, ultraviolet, X-ray, and gamma ray radiation. We now have infrared technology to look into the deep of space. And with the latest Webb telescope, astronomers have identified over 1 million distant galaxies not visible to the naked eye. Well, that certainly brings a different perspective to man's place in the universe. Perhaps it can evoke awe and wonder. Our beautiful blue marble planet seen from space certainly inspires an appreciation for the wonder and beauty of this home we call Earth. If we agree that only a fraction of our capacity is being used, and we certainly in this context, know that the world of the dragon is a very untenable and unsustainable world. But how do we see, experience the 99% that is present? That is the question before man. The answer is not in adding anything, but in removing what blocks the perception we already have. The light is already present. What blocks it are the areas in our hearts and minds that resist it. Fear. I just want to stay in my little comfy bubble, which is really not that comfortable nor sustainable, but I'm going to try to hold on. Ego. The small self-will, which is all about me and my world, regardless of others, and the planet I inhabit. Emotional reaction. Anger, shame, guilt, etc., which distorts the field of perception with confusion, misinterpretation, worry, and separation. Mental certainty. Oh yeah, show me the evidence based on what I can perceive with my limited five senses, even though I know it is only a fraction of what is really going on. And judgment. I am certain that I am right and you are wrong. Are you sure about that? Expression of light through an unblocked heart and still mind is beautifully represented through Maureen's words, is pure, clear, transparent, stable, truthful, and illuminating. The master said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. That refers to one's unwavering alignment with God. Here is purpose, direction, wisdom, a sense of lightness and joy, freedom, and connection to all things. It is interesting to contemplate other dimensions of our being that have not fully come online, but are present in essence in our capacities to perceive. Intuition, that sensing or compulsion in the moment to do or say something that if ignored circles back with a firmer nudge. Telepathy, levitation. There's all sorts of speculation as to how the pyramids were built. Superhuman powers that show up in our movies and comic book heroes. Perhaps a distant memory of what was and is possible, but only possible if trust is once again restored through man's alignment with God and his universal laws. In the cycles of awakening, there is a spiral effect. Our field of perception and understanding has the potential to widen and deepen with every rotation upwards. Take, for example, the universal law of life, the golden rule. Love the Lord thy God with all and love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, in the cycles of awakening, what we initially may have thought loving our neighbor meant was probably tolerance of their annoying behavior, and because I'm supposed to, and counting one's blessings that I'm not like them or in their boat. But coming into increased union with the Creator through expressing the qualities of divine being, compassion of the heart, understanding, appreciation, forgiveness, respect, and unconditional love, our neighbor is seen as part of oneself, not separate. We are aware that we are in a time of great change and transition. The old heaven is passing away. The light is intensifying. And the capacity of man to contain and release it constructively is at our doorstep. For those of us who have some understanding of this process, and that includes many more than we are aware of, we carry the greatest responsibility. With the world in such a state of confusion, turmoil, division, instability, and potential self-annihilation, our roles as light bearers is to keep the portals open of mind and heart We know how to do this, and we have a responsibility in our interactions with others to show the way. A book recently came to me into my hands, written by Melinda Gates, entitled The Next Day, Transitions, Change, and Moving Forward. It is a personal account of how she has navigated recent major life changes, including career shifts, relationship endings, grief, and identity evolution. The part I wish to share here is a parable from Ram Dass that she included. The story begins with two waves traveling together through the ocean, one big and the other small. As they get closer to land, the big one sees what's about to happen. One after another, the waves ahead of them are crashing into the shore, their force dissipating, their height collapsing, their imposing shape dissolving into foam. Devastated, the big wave tells the small one what is about to happen, warning in a grave voice that the end is near. The small wave receives this warning with incredible equanimity. "Don't worry," it says. "We'll all be fine." "Well, you don't understand," the tall wave insists. This is it. We're done for." The small wave is unmoved. "No," it says, "we're not. And I can explain why in just six words. You're not a wave. You're water." The story of the two waves is a story about possibilities. But equally important, it's a story about the power of perspective. As the two waves approach the shore, the tall wave can perceive what lies ahead only as a brutal ending. The small wave, though, can see the bigger picture. It understands that waves are just temporary manifestations of water's deeper, truer identity. And that understanding helps a small wave reconceptualize its collision with the shore. Instead of an ending, the collision marks a new beginning. Unquote. In light of our consideration, we can say that the small wave represents who we are in truth, our sense of self that is not narrowly defined by a temporary human form, but rather is realized as our true, unchanging nature. I'm not a wave acted upon, but rather the force that is animating all things, the radiance of the light. In this journey of return to wholeness, mankind's stuck consciousness in the 1% world of form elicits a sense of incompleteness and yearning for something more. Is that not true? Looking to and fro for purpose in the 1% world. The more is not found in the world of effects, but in cause. There is a choice each one of us must make as to which world we want to live in. The phrase "being in the world but not of it" is living fully engaged in human life while not letting one's identity, orientation, or consciousness be shaped by the collective distortions, fears, or value systems that dominate the world of effects. We could say the heads of the dragon. We can observe and hold space for each other, but we don't get pulled into the drama and the to-ing and fro-ing that characterizes the human state. For myself, it is a joy when I see someone articulating the truth. honoring the values of decency, respect, inclusiveness, and integrity among us. It is light illuminating the darkness of ignorance and insanity. May we light up our worlds so the choice for man becomes crystal clear. So those are my words. Hopefully complimented Maureen's, and now I'll open up for anyone else who wants to consider, continue our consideration. Thank you.
Joyce, thank you to you and Maureen for such a magnificent hour with so many beautiful meditations to consider together. It's one of those hours where I'm delighted we're going to have a transcript that we can go back and reference because so many beautiful points were made. But the bottom line of it is that we not only love being light workers, but we are the light. We are the love. We are the radiance of creator being. And that is just joy unspeakable. It's why we're here. It's why we are doing whatever we find ourselves doing in any given day and moment, to give praise to the Lord through our actions, through what moves in our heart and our minds, and the love that we can offer into our worlds in any given moment, whatever that might be, whatever pops up. So I thank you both so much. The glory and beauty of your feminine spirits, but the power of your masculine side as well that I loved, the true yin and yang of magnificent creation. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Well, if I could get in and say a word, I'm really touched by the beauty of particularly you two divine women expressing the truth. And as a man, I welcome the partnership with divine women. We balance each other. We need each other to represent what is true in heaven together with the masculine sense of strength and purpose, and the feminine sense of knowing, of intuition, of enfolding and loving beauty. Both are essential. We know the world of the dragon, of chaos, of the arguments back and forth, which can spill out into war, the politics and the religions and all the other stuff. And it occurred to me that in the book of Revelation, there are a lot of stories which taken together is something of an outline of the way fallen man can come back into divine identity. And after all the stuff about the dragons, you know, the battles and so on, there is the story of the camp of the saints. That's a certain terminology. We might speak about those who bring the light, which goes way beyond this little grouping. Includes the Maria Shrivers and Melinda Gates and everyone else who is bringing light each in their own way into the world. There's the camp of the saints, and all around them are the armies of chaos, Gog and Magog. But somehow the camp of the saints is victorious and man is restored. How that's going to happen, when it's going to happen, I don't know. But I'm delighted to play my part in being a light bearer and being a part of this tribe, this group of those who are awakening on earth and bringing the light, that there might be change and the true state might once again appear on earth. So it's wonderful. And we love the leadership, the feminine, beautiful leadership you two have provided. Thank you.
I would say thank you as well. Pure delight. And I would say, this is what I've been wanting to say for months now, but I had no idea how to put it all together. You did a magnificent job of understanding an intelligent conversation. Thank you. And I was thinking about the small wave and how the big wave has to break apart into many, many pieces in order to be part of the ocean. But the small wave just easily rolls in and rolls back about again because it knows it's part of something much larger than any big wave will ever be. There's such a clear example of what's going on in our world. Those big noisy waves, they don't need to mean anything to us. We can just go back into the ocean of thought and blessing and light that's doing the real job. You ladies were brilliant. Thank you.
Yes, I so fully agree. You were wonderful examples of Sophia in expression, and you make me proud to be a woman. And Larry, I loved what you spoke about of the Camp of the Saints being surrounded and how that might work out. I think about that a lot. And I also thought that the metaphor of the small wave, which Laura just touched on, might be a key in that, that I am not the wave, I am the water. I loved, Maureen, what you spoke from the Theo of Golden and how our putting the spotlight on the unseen beauty in others can actually evoke something of much greater potential in them. And Joyce, your list of all the things that block our perception of the seven-dimensional reality, I thought that was just brilliant. So I just celebrate the vivid, sparkling clarity of both mind and heart that came through you both. Thank you.
I'd like to add my thanks and love as well. As Marcia said, you make me proud to be a member of the Divine Feminine and to stand with the Divine Masculine and Feminine. I was thinking about water, the big wave and the small wave. You know, we're 97% water. Our bodies are mostly water. And yet I was actually reading an article about water this morning that only 3% of the Earth's water is drinkable fresh water. The rest of it is either salt water or it's deep underground, and it's some, you know, gazillions of gallons. The 99% is not available to us on Earth. But it's in our bodies. It's in our very selves. I walked out on my deck this morning about 6 and looked to the east. And there was wildfire smoke in the sky. And behind it was this amber light. And it was diffused across the sky. And as the sun kept rising over the ridge, the diffused light became more and more intense and more focused at the center of it until I had to look away because you're not supposed to look directly at the sun. The sun was there the whole time. It just took a little time for it to get through to my vision. The light is there. The water of truth is there. How blessed we are to know these things, and how exquisitely the two of you, my dear angel sisters, brought it to us for consideration this morning. Thank you.
It was exquisite. And the dramatic description of the devil kind of thing. Drew me to see the dragon. His keister, I'll call it, dragon, and the old earth, which is so minute. It's the surface of the earth where the disruption is happening. Where's the new earth? It's the core that's happening. I feel the scripture, rise up my love current, and come away from that grime. The height, where's the height? It's a focal point where the light comes through the grime, and it's a new earth showing through us. That's happening now. Rise up, my love, in me, my feminine essence that loves the Lord with all my heart. And come away from this grime, a little teeny grime, to the greatness of universal life. Let love radiate.
Thank you, Pendel. Maureen, would you like to say anything before we close?
Sure. I would just say, I love that. Camp of the Saints is victorious. And Pendel's come away from that grime. And it's interesting because in me, or each of us can say that, we know that we are the light, but this vessel here, this mind and our hearts, but right now I'm just going to talk about the mind for a quick minute, is in our mind, contained therein are the two aspects of light and wisdom, male and female, all contained within one, because one gives to the other, and together they provide what needs to come out through the mind out into our larger world. So it's such a wonderful, wonderful, I use the word adventure, but it's a wonderful adventure that we are undertaking. It's not some hard thing. It's not hard. It's really easy. What is it? My yoke is easy. My burden is light. My burden is literally light. That's what it is. And I just thought when Joyce, you mentioned the seven dimensions, it's all under control. That's the thing. We don't have to figure it all out. We just have to let that move out through us, that essence, that current of light move out. And it happens. It begins. Everything transforms right before our eyes. Magic, divine magic. So great to be with you and share this today with all of you, and with you too, Miss Joyce.
And thank you, Maureen. I'm delighted to be able to a blending of the voices, one voice for all of us. We come from the same source. We are one. And to rejoice in that and to send that call out, like Pendel said, come on board, wake up. We're all in this together. And may we declare in this day what the truth is, and the truth of everybody. So God bless you all. Thank you very much. And Sanford, I'll turn it over to you.
Yes.
beautiful thing.